Astroline.
This is 790 Astroline, presented by Carbach Brewing Company.
Astroline.
Your official preseason show of the Houston Astros.
Way out of here.
Swing and a miss. High fastball.
Let's talk Astros baseball. Call 713-212-5790. That's 713-212-5790.
Goals to win championships. It's a lot of work, a lot of commitment.
Live from Duffy Sports Grill in West Palm Beach, Florida, this is 790 Astroline.
And greetings from Duffy Sports Grill of Clematis. We're in West Palm Beach, downtown West Palm, for another edition of Astroline presented by Carbach Brewing Company. I'm Robert Ford, radio broadcaster for the Astros. Astros playing earlier today up in Jupiter, defeating the St. Louis Cardinals 3-0. Some great pitching in that, as you'd imagine, with a shutout. And the Astros able to pick up another spring win in that game against the St. Louis Cardinals. Take on the Mets tomorrow in Port St. Lucie, Florida. And the Astros starter for that game tomorrow joins me now, Astros pitcher Joe Musgrove, making an appearance on Astroline. Good to see you, Joe. Thanks for stopping by.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Now, you should be pretty familiar with the Mets, at least in spring training. This will be your third spring start. All of them have been against the New York Mets. I guess that's what's going to happen, too. The Mets just up the road in Port St. Lucie. You can see them and the Cardinals and the Nationals and the Marlins a lot.
Yeah, seeing quite a few of the same teams. But, you know, it's nice. It's a good little challenge and something for me to kind of stay on my toes, kind of facing the same hitters over and over, get me ready for season. So I'm good with it.
You threw three shutout innings on Saturday, your last appearance against the Mets. And, you know, spring training, obviously you're working on things and trying to get better, but I'd imagine it's also just getting stretched out and just getting that stamina back and getting used to going deeper in the game.
Yeah, trying to get into that pitching shape. You know, in the off season, there's not too many times where you'll get up there and throw 50, 60-plus pitches off the bump, you know. So, you know, it's all about getting the body ready and making sure everything's feeling right and that I'm healthy going into the year. And then as these next few starts come down, as we get closer to season, you know, I'll start bearing down on the things I really want to lock in before we get going.
Is this year's camp different for you? Because, I mean, last year you came into camp and, you know, you had been the Astros minor league pitcher of the year in 2015. And you obviously want to see what you could do, but it was a little different than now when you're really competing for a spot. I mean, last year, I mean, you know, they always say everybody in camp has a chance to win a spot, but that's not necessarily true. But this year, I mean, you're fighting for that, for one of those spots in the rotation. So is it a little different vibe for you in this camp because of what you can accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the way it breaks down like that, it is a little, there's a little more on the line. But, you know, I'm trying to go in with the same mentality and just do what I need to do to prepare myself and not look too far into the future, you know. I still got to be ready for opening day, whether it's in the minor leagues or in the major leagues. So I'm trying to do everything I can to, you know, prepare myself for that day.
Talking with Astros pitcher Joe Musgrove, and you get to camp this year, as I mentioned, competing for a spot, and it's a different team. I mean, obviously a lot of the same guys are back, including yourself, but adding some veterans, particularly on the position player side with Brian McCann and Carlos Beltran coming over, and also adding Charlie Morton, who certainly has plenty of experience in the big leagues on the pitching side. Is the vibe, is the mood in the clubhouse different? Can you sense things are a little different, expectations are a little different this year than last year in camp?
Yeah, expectations are really high this year, but I think we all embrace them. You know, we all know we've got a really good team, and everyone's really excited to see what we can put together. You know, there's a lot of different viewpoints you're getting in that clubhouse, even from, you know, guys like McCullers, who've had a couple of years in Correa, to guys like Beltran and, you know, the older guys that have been around a while. So we got a really good mix, and there's a lot of young talent on this team. It's going to be cool to get some of the older guys that have been around and done it a while to kind of show us the ropes.
Big league camp last year. Anybody take you under their wing? Anybody that you found yourself really leaning on to try and just kind of figure out how things work?
Yeah, I was lockered next to McHugh, and he was really good with me, kind of showed me the ins and outs. Gregerson showed me the ins and outs of some things, you know, but there's so many different, you know, vibes around that clubhouse. So I tried to bounce around as much as I could and kind of grab a little bit from everybody there.
Talking with Joe Musgrove, and, you know, this offseason, you're from San Diego. You were in San Diego this offseason?
Yeah, I was in San Diego.
So what? Anything in particular that you really wanted to work on after getting that taste of the big leagues? Obviously, last year making 16 games in the minors, but 11 games, 10 starts in the big leagues last year. After getting an idea of what to expect, what you saw, was there anything in particular you went into this offseason season saying you wanted to work on?
Yeah, you know, I wanted to sharpen up some of my breaking balls and, you know, be able to locate them a little better. I've always felt pretty good with my slider, but my changeup and curveballs have always been, you know, secondary to me. So, yeah, I had some success with it last year, and especially getting up into the big leagues and facing some of those hitters over and over. You know, I got to have different things to show them to, you know, kind of save a weapon for the second, third time around in the lineup. So, you know, I worked on fine-tuning those pitches, but for me it was kind of building up stamina. You know, I've never had to go 162 games and, you know, into the postseason like we plan to do this year. So, for me it was just kind of getting the stamina up and building my body up, preparing myself to be healthy throughout a full season.
You mentioned you have a curveball and a slider, which is a little unique. A lot of pitchers have one or the other rather than both. It can be difficult to maintain a curveball and a slider over the course of a game, over the course of a season. How do you work the two? Is it one of those things where if one's on, you use that more and maybe don't use the other as much on a particular day?
Yeah, you know, every time I go out to the bullpen before a game, I try to, you know, rank my pitches in an order of 1 to 4 on what's best that day, what's worst that day. And, you know, me and the catcher will get on the page and same page and, you know, we'll go from there. So if the curveball's better than the slider that day, we'll usually tend to favor that one a little more. You know, I have tendencies on what I like to throw to righties and what I like to throw to lefties, so that'll depend a little bit. But, you know, I like to have options. And if it gets to the point where, you know, I have two average pitches instead of, you know, one really good pitch, then I'll have to, you know, shorten it down to one. But right now I feel pretty good with both of them, so.
You mentioned one of the changes the Astros made this offseason, bringing in Brian McCann, veteran catcher, and a guy who has plenty of experience with the Braves and the Yankees, has been in the postseason. He's worked with a lot of really talented pitchers. How much have you and McCann been able to kind of just bounce ideas off of each other, and have you been able to learn from him about pitch selection and how what he likes to call?
Yeah, definitely. And it's always best when you can go out there and throw to him in a game and then in between innings come in and say, you know, what do you think of this sequence, or here's what I was thinking in this spot, you know, what would you like to do there? I've gotten to throw to him twice now, and, you know, we've gotten to communicate a lot on those two outings, and it's real limited sample size, but I think we're on a good page right now, and I'll probably get to throw to him maybe once or twice more. I'll have Gattis tomorrow, which I'm pretty excited about. But yeah, I mean, he's got so much knowledge and so much time in the game that it's, you know, hard to not learn from him if you're around him.
And now Evan Gattis, and, you know, you got to work with him last year in the big leagues. What everybody tells me about Gattis, guys who pitched to him here with the Astros or when he was with the Atlanta Braves, they all say the same thing about him, is he really just works hard back there.
Yeah,
I know pitchers really appreciate that.
Yeah, he's a bulldog back there, and me and him have similar mentalities when we're out on the mound. You know, we like to attack and challenge guys, and, you know, it's fun having a guy back there that you know is on the same page mentally and, you know, energy-wise. And, you know, he's good. He challenged me a lot last year. He challenged me to throw pitches in situations that I might not have been comfortable in and, you know, challenged me to do things that I'd never done before. And I actually learned a lot from him, you know, and he gave me that confidence when you execute that pitch that you're not 100% sure in and you trust him and you go for it and you guys execute it. You know, there's that little bond that's built right there between that one pitch. So we had plenty of moments like that last year, and I'm looking forward to, you know, having more this year.
And you bring up a good point, because I've talked about this a lot with Steve Sparks, my broadcast partner, former pitcher himself. He likes to talk about how when you have a different guy catching you, and because everybody's different, right? Everybody has different ideas about sequences and what to throw in different situations. And he's talked about how sometimes you just have the backup catcher catch you one particular start, how it can almost be like a breath of fresh air, and nothing against the starting catcher, but they usually have a little bit of a different idea and sometimes maybe get you to think outside of the box. Did you find that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've thrown, you know, and especially in camp last year, you know, you get whoever you get out there, you know. So you learn to just kind of go with the flow, and that's kind of how I've, you know, pitched the last couple of years. I've learned to trust my catcher, and, you know, you talk so much in between starts and stuff that, you know, you feel as prepared as you can be in going into the game because, you know, you never know what he's going to call. You can't be, you know, dead on with everything, every pitch call that he makes. So, and I don't want to be out there shaking all day, so... You know, for the most part, I just tell them, you know, here's what I like, here's what I don't like. You know, we'll talk a little bit. And then when it comes game time, I just kind of roll with the punches. You know, if there's a situation where I really don't feel like it's the right pitch to throw, you know, I'll shake or we'll talk about it. But you know, for the most part, I go out there and I trust my catcher. And, you know, I feel like whatever he's got in his mind, if I can execute the pitch where he wants it, it's going to be a good pitch. So.
Always so much easier when you don't have to shake a whole lot and you and the catcher on the same page.
Yeah, and I've always been big on tempo and rhythm of the game, and I don't like the hitters to have a chance to get in the box and really get comfortable. So the more I can keep the tempo going and we can keep the flow going, then, you know, I'm good with that.
All right, so you're facing the Mets tomorrow, Port St. Lucie. Mentioned earlier, you all three of your appearances in spring, including tomorrow, have been against the New York Mets, and you mentioned how you're familiar with a lot of these guys. There's one guy in the lineup tomorrow I know you're not familiar with, at least not facing him. Tim Tebow's supposed to play tomorrow for the Mets, call up for minor league camp. He's trying his hand at professional baseball at 29. He played baseball in high school and Heisman Trophy winner as a quarterback, 2007, played in the NFL. I'm sure you're familiar with...
Yeah, I know the guy.
You've heard of him. Familiar with what he's done in his athletic career. Have you thought much about... Well, first of all, I'm assuming you were aware Tebow was supposed to play tomorrow. Have you thought much about how you might pitch him? And if you don't want to give away any secrets, I understand.
But. I'm going to give him some heaters, see if he can hit a fastball.
All right.
Yeah, I've watched his swing a little bit. You know, he's not a baseball player. You know, he's a football player. So he's trying to make the transition, and I support him 100%, man. If he's going for it, go for it.
And that's Rick Porcello did. He threw them all fastballs, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I'll mix it in if I feel like I need to, but I'm gonna go at him with some fastballs until I feel like I need to make a change.
Could you imagine being? First of all, you're not 29 yet, but could you imagine being 29 years old, not having played baseball? I think it had been in over a decade for Tim Tebow, and then trying your hand at professional baseball.
Yeah, man,
it's amazing.
We have, as baseball players, we've been playing this game for so long. You know, I feel like he doesn't have the same baseball mind that we do after playing for so many years. You pick up things over the years, and it just becomes part of you. So, you know, he'll catch on and he'll learn throughout. I mean, he's surrounded with plenty of guys there that can get him in the right direction. So, I think he'll be all right.
On the flip side, could you imagine being a quarterback at a major Division I college?
Yeah, that's different. Yeah,
just a little different. New spring training complex this year. Everything's new for everyone. Astros have been in Kissimmee for the last 30 years. First year in West Palm Beach and at the ballpark of the Palm Beaches. You've been down here since February when pitchers and catchers reported. How have you found the complex to be? How have you found the area to be?
Oh, the facility is incredible. I mean, it's top of the line. Everything, you know, everywhere you go, from the food to the, you know, to the weight room to the locker room, everything is top notch. In the area, I like the area. I mean, there's tons of restaurants here, tons of good food. The beaches. I mean, I'm from San Diego, you know, so I'm at the beach every day in the off season. So
yeah,
you know, I was actually down at the beach today for a little bit. But any chance I get, I head down to the water and, you know, getting some sun. So I'm loving the area.
You a surfer?
I haven't surfed in a couple of years. Surfed in high school a bit. I haven't surfed really since I got out of high school.
Yeah, because I know Brad Ausmus, a guy, he would be down in San Diego in the offseason when he played, you know, now the Detroit Tigers manager. That would be his offseason workout, is he would surf.
Yeah, Ausmus, he actually lived not too far from me in this offseason. He's about a five-minute drive.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, the good restaurants in here. Are you a restaurant guy? Are you a foodie?
I am. You know, I actually haven't looked up yet, but it's something I did with my dad last offseason. Me and him used to watch Food Network all the time in the offseason, you know, whenever I was home. And we started watching Triple D, the Diners, Drive-Ins,
Dives. Oh, yeah.
You know, so that guy's been all over the country. So everywhere I go now in different cities, you know, he'll always send me an email of, like, you got to check out these three spots. These are spots that he went to, you know, when he was on the road. So, found some good restaurants. Haven't really looked up any out here yet, so I'll have to start checking out.
What was the best meal you had on the road last year?
I went to a place in Toronto with Colin. It was called Shore Club.
Shore Club.
Yeah, it was right next to the hotel we stayed at up there, and we got in the night before our start, and me and him went over there and we got a steak dinner and some seafood. It was incredible.
Now, was that that definitely wasn't on Diners, Drive-Ins?
No,
Drive-Ins,
it wasn't.
Dives.
No.
But that was what was the best place you've gone to from Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives?
I went to a place in Memphis. It was called Rendezvous Barbecue.
Okay.
It was a barbecue spot when I was down in AAA. We'd stop through there, and that was one of my favorites.
Rendezvous Barbecue in Memphis. All right. Good enough for Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives and Joe Musgrove.
Yeah, it's a good spot.
All right. Hey, don't forget, ready to see your 2017 Astros in action. A 15-game Flex Pack is now available. 15-game Flex Pack will allow you to save money and choose which Astros games and seat locations work best for you. Visit astros.com/miniplans for more information and to buy your perfect pack today. We'll have more with Astros pitcher Joe Musgrove as we continue with Astroline, presented by Carbach Brewing Company, live from Duffy Sports Grill of Clematis in West Palm Beach and on the Houston Astros Radio Network. And so now Musgrove, who's been a starter throughout his minor league career, will come into this game. Lance McCullers departing with an apparent injury. He'll get as much time as he needs to warm up.
How fitting is it for Musgrove to get a chance, first time as a major leaguer against the team that drafted him? 2011, he was a first rounder.
Any of the 24,000-plus getting to their feet, showing their support for the rookie right-hander making his big league debut. 3-2 to Toley. Swing and a miss. Struck him out on a breaking ball. 8 strikeouts for Joe Musgrove in his big league debut. An impressive 4 1/3 innings. He strands a pair in the ninth. And welcome back to Astroline, presented by Carbach Brewing Company, coming to you live from Duffy Sports Grill of Clematis in downtown West Palm Beach. I'm Robert Ford, joined by Astros pitcher Joe Musgrove. Hey, next time you're looking for a great IPA, please remain calm. Carbach's Hopadillo IPA is loaded with hops from around the world for the perfect citrus character. Carbach Brewing Company, Houston, Texas. Well, we just heard the radio call from your major league debut, Joe. You got called up by the Astros August 1st, the very next day. Lance McCullers leaves the game, wound up missing the rest of the season with elbow soreness, and you came on and faced the Toronto Blue Jays. 4 1/3 shutout innings in relief, gave up just a hit, walked 1, struck out 8, set a major league record for most strikeouts by a reliever in their big league debut. Not a bad way to start off your career.
Yeah, man, that was an incredible night. Very memorable.
So you're in the bullpen, and you obviously you. I mean, well, what did AJ Hinch tell you when you arrived?
He told me that I'd be in the pen, but he knows I'm a starter and that I'm used to that starting routine. So he was going to give me plenty of time, plenty of heads up to get warmed up, and at least a fresh inning to go out and start a fresh inning, and have my time to prepare. That wasn't the case.
No.
It's unfortunate that, Lance got hurt and I had to go into the game. And I think it might have been best that it happened that way. It gave me less time to really analyze the situation and think about it. I kind of was just thrown out into traffic, and I feel like that's when you react best. So you just went out there and competed.
Like I mentioned, you got called up August 1st. You were with Fresno. Where were you and how did you find out that you were going to the big leagues?
I was in Reno. And we were actually, it was during the day, and we were walking around the casino, throwing a couple bucks in the slot machine before we head to the field. And I got a text saying I wasn't starting today. So as soon as I get to the field, I go into the manager's office, and Tony sits me down and tells me that they're sending me up. But I'm going to be in kind of a holding pattern because they're not sure if Fister's going to end up having the baby or not. If he has
So
if he has the kid, I'm going to go pitch. If he doesn't have the kid, I could come back to AAA, might stay up in there, so I didn't know what the situation was going to be. But I get up there, and all the way up until Monday morning, the night that I was supposed to start, I still wasn't really sure what was going to go down. Told me to come over to the field. That was right after they ended up trading Feldman.
Right.
Feldman got traded, so I took over his spot in the bullpen, and we ended up going 14 innings that night.
Yeah.
And I'm the last guy down in the bullpen. Everyone else is gone. It's me and the bullpen catcher, me and Brock and Mooney. And we're sitting there, and I'm just thinking to myself, this is how I'm going to do it. It's going to be the 16th inning. I'm going to, haven't thrown all day and not really ready for this.
Right.
Carlos ends up hitting a walk-off double. So I know I'm going to be the first arm in the next night. So that whole next night, I'm sitting in the bullpen. I'm watching the game closely. I'm kind of talking to guys, trying to learn the courtesy of the bullpen. I'm not really used to it down there. So
right.
Trying to learn how things work and just kind of see what guys look for throughout a game. And I'm talking to Bracamonte, and sure enough, someone says, "Hey, Lance is getting looked at. You might want to, start getting warm." As I'm taking my hoodie off, phone rings. "Hey, you're in the game. I got to run out there, man." And I was never been so winded in my life just getting that run to the mound, man. Heart's racing, So it was pretty exciting.
And that's a really unique situation too, because pitcher gets hurt, you're in the game. You get as much time as you want to warm up. And normally, obviously, when you're warming up to come into a game, whether it's for a start or in relief, all your warm-ups are in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. You have time to kind of work things out in the bullpen. No one's really watching
right.
you. Whereas when you come in to replace an injured pitcher and you have to go through your entire warm-up routine in the game, and as you mentioned, you're not used to pitching out of the bullpen. So what was that experience like? I know a lot of times pitchers will rush through it because everybody's mm-hmm. looking at them. How did you approach that situation in the moment?
I mean, my first couple throws, my arm felt like it was already ready to go. I had so much adrenaline, I couldn't even feel, any kind of stiffness. So at that point, I was just trying to get my stuff in a box, you know, just trying to put everything, get everything in one area, you know, and let's go from there. So, you know, I wasn't concerned about the 30,000 or whatever it was watching. I was concerned about their whole dugout sitting 30 feet from me, you know, watching every pitch I have. And that was kind of my advantage. These guys hadn't seen me yet, you know, and they don't know what I have. So, you know, that kind of went out the window. But, you know, my warm-up pitches actually were, I was all over the place, man. You know, I was out of the zone, in the dirt, out of the zone. And it just seemed like as soon as the hitter stepped in there, everything else started to slow down. And, you know, I didn't really, it was kind of like a blackout, man, for four innings.
Wow. Yeah. If you keep blacking out like that, you keep pitching like that.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned, you know, the Blue Jays, they didn't know what you had, they hadn't seen you, but you were a first round pick of the Blue Jays back in 2011. Was there anybody that you can remember who was with Toronto that game who you had played with in the minor leagues? You were only in the Blue Jays system for about a season and a half.
Yeah, there was a few guys. Not that through that night, but Sanchez, Aaron Sanchez, I played with him.
Yeah.
I was with Osuna, played with Pilar. So there was quite a few guys in that team that I played with.
Did it ever cross your mind that you were making your big league debut against a team that had drafted you?
Oh, yeah. And I talked to my pops about that. You know, I said, I hope I get to go up. And I said, I could see myself making a debut against Toronto, you know, and just dominating them. And it ended up going down like that.
It certainly did. And then, you know, McCullers was hurt. Wound up going on the disabled list the next day after you made your debut, and you wound up replacing him in the rotation, and you got your first big league start in the thick of a playoff chase against the Texas Rangers on August 7th, and you pitched great. You got no decision, but you gave up a run over seven innings. Was it easier to prepare for that start because you had already pitched, or was it a little bit more nerve-wracking because you had more time to think about it rather than when you made the relief appearance?
A little bit of both. You know, I definitely did a lot more thinking about that start. But at the same time, man, I just, when you get out there, it's, you know, I hadn't really had any failure yet. So I was pretty confident, and, you know, I just went with my stuff, what I knew how to get guys out with. And I rode that as long as I, you know, felt like I needed to. And then I got banged up a little bit against Baltimore and Pittsburgh. And that was kind of when I had to sit back and really, you know, look at it and make a few adjustments here and there and find out what was, you know, going to be my path. And I felt pretty good since then, man, from that point on.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, you faced the Rangers, no decision, pitch well. Next start was against the Toronto Blue Jays in Toronto, August 12th. Mm-hmm. Second big league start, and you got your first big league win in that game, gave up two runs over seven innings. And you mentioned the two starts after that, your third and fourth starts against the Orioles on the 18th of August. That was in Baltimore, and you struggled in that game, got your first big league loss, lost your next start in Pittsburgh, August 23rd. And that one, I mean, that was an ambush, because the first seven batters of that game, and I know you remember this, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but first seven batters got hits, and before you even had retired a batter, you're down 4-0 in the first inning. You know, you wound up going four innings, which from what I remember about that game is pretty remarkable considering the way things started, and you were able to save the bullpen a little bit. Despite the rocky start. But after those two starts, was that kind of a turning point or a wake-up call for you?
Yeah. You know, I had started really looking into, like I said, you know, after those first couple starts, you know, I felt like I was cruising a little bit too much. I was like, it shouldn't be like, you know, I feel like I said, maybe there's something I need to look into more. So I started getting into a lot of film study and, you know, reading up more on the hitters and stuff. And that was always something I had looked into, but I'd had like a real small kind of few things that I would look for before a start, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I found myself getting really deep into it and, you know, starting to lose my mentality on the mound of attacking, and I was kind of more getting defensive as a pitcher, trying to fool guys more than just going at them and challenging them. So after getting knocked around those two games, you know, I kind of just told myself, hey, man, if I'm going to get beat, I want to get beat, you know, with my best stuff that I have confidence in. So I kind of went back to, you know, challenging guys in that, you know, more aggressive mentality on the mound, and that seemed to get me right back to where I wanted to be.
Is the danger sometimes of film study, and film is a big part of the game today, whether you're a hitter or a pitcher, everybody looks at film, everybody looks at video. Is a big part of it, too, understanding that, okay, you know, these are these guys' weaknesses, and you want to try and attack their weaknesses, but also got to focus on your strengths, because their weaknesses, I mean, okay, that's one thing, but you need to do what you do best.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, I've always tried to stick to my strengths and not, you know, pitch against their weaknesses. And like I said, those two outings where I really got hurt, I felt like that was the main thing that had changed in those outings. But, yeah, I mean, pitching to my strengths is always going to be my go-to. You know, I feel like the confidence I have behind a pitch when it's something that I have faith in, you know, and it's me attacking the guy, I feel like that's going to be a better pitch than the one that might statistically be a better pitch to throw in that situation. You know?
Right, right. Maybe you don't do it. Maybe you didn't do it in the heat of the moment. Maybe you did it after you kind of stepped back and looked at your outings. But was there any players that you faced, any hitters that you faced, where either in the moment or maybe afterwards you thought, man, I faced this guy. I played this with this guy in video games, or I watched this guy on TV, and here I am facing whomever. Was there anybody like that for you?
Adrian Beltre.
Yeah.
You know, the guy's been around forever, and he's one of the most impressive guys at the plate in the league right now. And, you know, the first couple times I faced him, I handled him pretty well, you know, no big damage. And then he started to figure me out a little bit. So that was when it became a game. I was like, okay, this is a dude. Now I got to figure out how I can beat this guy multiple times throughout a year, you know. And those are the guys that we're hunting down this year, you know. So I'm gonna be real prepared for him this year.
It seems to me, and obviously I don't pitch, but it seems to me the toughest thing about facing Beltre is he can hit anything, and he can hit anything out of the zone. It could be 2 feet out of the zone, 3 feet out of the zone, and he can still crush it. I mean, I just don't know how you pitch somebody like that.
His plate coverage is impressive. So, you know, that's one of those guys where you can't really try to fool him too much. You know, you got to beat him with your best stuff, and I try to beat him in the zone. You know, I want him to swing the bat, and the less pitches he gets to see, I feel like the better that is. So if I can get him out in one or two pitches, you know, I'm going to throw you strike. It might not be where you want it or what you're looking for, but it's going to be in the zone. So if he's swinging, you know, I'm hoping to get him out in one or two pitches.
World Baseball Classic is going on right now, and it continues through March 22nd. Don't miss your chance to see the best players represent and compete for their country, including some of your favorite Astros. Get your tickets now at worldbaseballclassic.com. We'll have more with Astros pitcher Joe Musgrove as Astroline, presented by Carbach Brewing Company, continues live from Duffy's Sports Grill in Clematis, West Palm Beach, and on the Houston Astros Radio Network. And welcome back to Astroline, presented by Carbach Brewing, coming to you live from West Palm Beach, Duffy's Sports Grill of Clematis. Robert Ford here with Joe Musgrove. Astros will be celebrating Jeff Bagwell's election into the Hall of Fame throughout 2017. Special 5-game ticket package is now available. Package includes tickets to the Bagwell Hall of Fame weekend in August and access to exclusive Bagwell-themed giveaways. Visit astros.com/miniplans for more information. Joined by Joe Musgrove, we just heard some highlights from your first big league start, talked about a little earlier on August 7th against the Texas Rangers in front of 33,000-plus at Minute Maid Park. And Astros were fighting with the Rangers, trying to get into the postseason. And I mean, that's unlike, I mean, I don't know that there's anything in the minor leagues as an amateur that really prepares you for being in the heat of a pennant race.
No, not at all, you know. But I love situations like that, you know. I usually don't really feel much pressure, you know. I've always felt like pressure and fear comes on to you when, you know, you feel unprepared for something. And I take a lot of pride in the way I prepare for my outing. So, you know, I felt confident going in against them.
Got some questions from the audience, and you can tweet us at Astros. Use the hashtag Astroline if you have some questions for...
Take it easy on me, guys.
For Joe Musgrove. Here's a good one. This is from Chad on Twitter, who wants to know your thoughts on the new intentional walk rule. Not actually having to throw to walk a guy, A.J. Hinch, or whoever the manager is. They can just make a signal from the dugout, put the guy at first base. What are your thoughts?
I don't like that.
You don't?
You know, I think that's part of the game. You know, as easy as it is, we're pitchers. We should be able to throw four balls, you know, at half speed outside of the box. And, you know, usually the times that those are called upon is when it's a big situation. So, you know, the pressure's on. Let's see if you can make four. All you got to do is throw four balls out there, you know. So I like the idea of that. I mean, I hope. I don't like the rule change.
There's some pitchers who have a lot of trouble with that. I mean, I'm sure you've seen it.
It is tough, you know, when you're going max effort down in the zone and you're working at the knees and everything's down. Now you're asked to kind of just place one over here off to the side, up in the zone, out, you know, and nothing like what you've been doing for 5-6 innings. So I could see how it's tough, but that's part of the game. You know, that's, if you're bad at it, we got to work on it.
All right, I have another question from Matthew Hudas. I might be pronouncing that last name wrong. My apologies, Matthew. But Matthew wants to know, who was your favorite player as a kid? You grew up in San Diego. I know you're a big Padres fan. Who was your favorite player as a kid?
You know, I loved guys like Tony Gwynn and Hoffman. Those guys were two of my heroes growing up. You know, anytime you go to a Padres game, And, you know, you prayed for a lead going into the ninth, you know, so you get the Hells Bells and Trevor time, you know, so that was always really special. But my guy was Jake Peavy. You know, I love watching him throw and the stuff that he had and the way that he carried himself out on the mound. You know, I always related to him just because of the emotion that he plays with, you know, and that he shows out on the mound. And I always felt the same way, but I never really knew that it was, you know, okay to really show it like that, you know, out at the big league level. And watching him, you know, kind of assured me that it's okay to do that. And that was kind of, you know, his style, and he let it ride. So
yeah,
I really
loved it. Yeah, he wore his heart on the sleeve. Like, yeah. He knew what he was thinking at all times.
Yep, and I love that about him. So that was always my guy growing up.
I mean, guys who have faced Jake Peavy have told me, hitters have told me that he'll be yelling at himself on the mound.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, you know, it's just he'll make a bad pitch, and he'll be yelling at himself. And as a hitter, you have to kind of know, all right, he's not talking to me.
Yeah.
That's, but, yeah, he an intense competitor.
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned Trevor Hoffman. You got to start the Futures game at Petco Park in San Diego. It wound up being less than a month before you got the big league call-up. It happened in July, right before the All-Star game. And your manager, or I guess he was technically a captain of the team, was a Trevor Hoffman.
Yep.
Because, you know, they always try to get local players. And so he was the captain of the U.S. team for the Futures game. And it was actually Trevor Hoffman who called you to tell you that you were going to be starting the Futures game. I mean, first of all, you're getting a phone call from a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty neat.
Yeah,
and somebody you grew up watching.
Yeah, and I was out at dinner with my family and a couple friends, just kind of enjoying a family dinner. And I get a call, and we're at the dinner table, so I didn't answer the phone. And then it keeps buzzing, so I look down. It's a text message, and it says, "Hey, this is Hoffy. You know, just wanted to talk to you for a minute. Give me a call when you got." I tell my dad, I said, "Dude, I just ignored Hoffman's call." I said, I gotta go. So I call him back, and he told me, he said, "You know, I wanted to let you know that you're gonna have to start tomorrow, and you know, I'm really excited for you to be able to enjoy this in your hometown." And that was really special to me. You know, one, to get invited to a game like that was a huge moment in my career. And then on top of it, for it to be in San Diego was just icing on the cake. You know, so many of my family and friends have been, you know, so supportive throughout this whole thing. And for me to be able to come home and play in a game that has the meaning that game does in front of all them was extremely special to me. And then the showing was incredible. You know, so many friends, so much family that all came out to watch me. So it was really cool.
That's really neat. And was it the first time you got in the pitch at Petco Park?
That was actually, yeah. We had a series in high school where it was like every third or fourth year your school would get to go play in a little exhibition game kind of at the stadium, but I never got to do it when I was in high school there. So, yeah, that was my first time down there.
So growing up in San Diego, and I mean, that's a baseball hotbed. You see so many guys come out of that area. You went to Grossmont High School in San Diego, which had last year at one time, at the end of the year, once you got up there, they had three guys from Grossmont High School pitching in starting rotations in the big leagues. It was you, A.J. Griffin, who was pitching for the Rangers, a little older than you, and Stephen Brault, who was a young pitcher with the Pirates. Were you there the same time Brault was?
Yeah, so I played with Griffin's brother, Aaron. I played with him a little bit throughout my high school career, and then Brault was 1 year older than me. So, yeah, me and him played 3 years together.
That's pretty neat. But, I mean, one high school, I mean, there are high schools that won't have three starting pitchers ever.
Yeah.
But your high school had three starting pitchers in the big leagues at the same time. It's in rotations. That's pretty amazing. And now you kind of got a late start on pitching. You didn't really start pitching until you got to high school, right?
Yeah, when I was about 15. I mean, I had thrown in a couple games as a young kid growing up through travel ball, but I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I just got on the mound and threw as hard as I could. You know?
Yeah.
Just took a chance.
So what led to you? First of all, what positions did you play?
I was a catcher and played the corners in the infield.
Okay, so what led to the change? What led to getting on the mound more consistently?
As a freshman, I was like 6'2", 210, and I was like, I'm getting too big to get behind the plate and squat down every game. I said, I'm going to go pitch. I'm going to give that a shot. So, you know, my godfather, Dominic Johnson from San Diego, he'd been a pitching coach for years. And I'd never worked with them. You know, I'd gone up there and spent a lot of time back there meeting guys and just watching guys throw and kind of learning the terminology and all the things that they do up there. And, you know, when I was 15, we talked about it, and he said, yeah, I think now's a good time to get you up here and, you know, get you starting to throw and start really working on stuff. So at a young age, you know, any time I pitched, it was just go out there and, you know, throw your fastball, throw a couple changeups. You know, I never really threw curveballs or breaking balls or anything.
Yeah.
So that was when I kind of really started getting into learning how to pitch, you know, not just throw.
How much of an advantage do you think it was for you that you didn't really start pitching till your freshman year? So, I mean, that's less mileage on your arm. I mean, obviously you had a lot of catching up to do, but, I mean, you wound up being a first-round pick after your senior year of high school, so obviously you learned pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I mean, out of high school, I think it was good. I had a fresh arm, you know, but I was just a hard thrower, man. My velo was up probably a little higher than it is now in high school. It was like 94, 98 probably.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just got away with just challenging guys. And I think that's kind of where I got my, you know, my attack mode and the mentality I have on the mound is just I was always bigger and stronger than everyone growing up. And, you know, I just took my chances in the zone. I said, if I can throw it in the zone, it's, you know, they're not going to hit it. So I got a lot of confidence that way. But, you know, I don't know how much I could have really learned before high school as I can act as a pitcher. You know, you're not facing good enough competition to really compare it to anything, you know, or relate it. So I think I chose the right time to start pitching, and you know, even when I got drafted, I'm a completely different pitcher now than I was when I got drafted. You know, I just had a really good arm and had some good stuff. I just didn't really know how to use it that well.
Hey, Astros spring training games are underway. Catch all the excitement in West Palm Beach as the Astros make the new ballpark of the Palm Beach as their spring training home. Site includes many fan-friendly and state-of-the-art amenities for fans to enjoy a game. For tickets and for more information, visit ballparkofthepalmbeaches.com. We'll have more with Astros starting pitcher Joe Musgrove as we continue on Astroline, presented by Carbach Brewing Company, live from Duffy Sports Grill in Clematis, downtown West Palm Beach, and on the Houston Astros Radio Network. 1-2. Swing and a miss. Trout down on strikes. Got him on a 93-mile-an-hour fastball.
What a beautiful job by Joe Musgrove. One run and seven innings pitched.
In line for the victory.
Just the second Astros starter to go seven innings since August 27th. So a big boost for this team.
And welcome back to Astroline, presented by Carbach Brewing Company. Coming to you live from Duffy Sports Grill of Clematis in downtown West Palm Beach. Get ready, Astros fans. Baseball season's right around the corner. You can find fresh Astros merchandise for the upcoming season by visiting the Astros team store. Purchase customized jerseys, Astros gear, hats, and more. Visit astros.com/team store to see what's available today. Lots of new stuff in the team store, so definitely want to make sure you check that out either in person at Minute Maid Park or online, and of course team store down here at the ballpark of the Palm Beaches during spring training as well. Robert Ford joined by Astros pitcher Joe Musgrove over final segment of Astroline presented by Carbach Brewing Company this evening, and we were talking before the break about you starting to pitch when you were 15 years old, started working with your godfather, Dominic Johnson, and let's talk about your godfather a little bit. You know, family, obviously a family, part of your family and somebody that you've known pretty much your whole life and someone he'd worked with a lot of different pitchers over the years, right?
Yeah, tons of guys.
But yet, you never pitched until your freshman year. Was it one of those things once you decided to make that switch to pitching where he was kind of like, I've been waiting for this sort of thing?
Yeah. And I think he had been holding off and didn't want me to come in until, you know, until I got to a certain age and a certain point where my body had kind of developed a little more. So I think he had more control over that than I did. I didn't really even know I wanted to pitch until he brought it up. So,
at what point in high school did you realize that you had a chance to play professional baseball?
I mean, that had always been my dream, man. But I had a tough sophomore year. My dad had an illness that really set back a lot, you know, our whole family. Mm-hmm. And you know, I ended up being ineligible that year. So, you know, that mark, I didn't think I was, I thought that really limited my chances at even college, you know. So that sophomore year, I think my mindset was more in like, okay, how am I going to get these grades fixed? How am I going to get everything going back on track to get myself just into school, you know?
Yeah.
San Diego State came along, and I took that offer immediately. It was a hometown team. Like I said, my dad was sick, so I got to stay close to home, and everyone could come see me play, and I can kind of keep an eye on him. But, you know, my junior year, I started to really flash good velo. I had a good record that year. And that was the summer where I really started getting a lot of attention and a lot of heat from different scouts and stuff. And that my senior year, they were, you know, 25, 30 deep at our games. And, you know, that was when I really started to see it becoming a reality for me.
Did you, before that 2011 draft, you were the 46th overall pick in that draft, first-round pick of the Blue Jays. Did you have any idea going into that draft that you might go in the first round?
Not the first round. I was told somewhere between 2 and 4. You know, I thought there was a wild chance that maybe I could go on that first day, but, you know, we didn't have a big draft party. It was just me and my family, and I had, you know, a buddy over, and Dominic was over. And we're sitting there watching, and It just went down so fast. You know, we see Roberto Alomar walk across the screen, and he sits there, and I heard him say Joe. And a couple times that day, Joe Ross, you know, a couple different guys had gone that day, and I kept hearing Joe.
It's a common first name.
Yeah, everyone just kind of stopped for a minute, and then I was like, okay. it was really exciting.
So you get drafted by the Blue Jays, first-round pick in 2011. Did you go to the Gulf Coast League first or the Blue Field first?
I did. I went to the Gulf, man. I hit every stop on the way. I went to Gulf Coast for about 2 months. I got there. I signed the day after the draft. They came to my school, and I signed in the library with my coach and a couple of my friends.
Uh-huh.
Graduated on the 16th of June, left the 17th of June, and went out to go start playing. So I was there for our first game, and I stayed all the way through, I think, like one of the last days of August, and then went up for like the last 2 weeks while they were making a little playoff push. We went to the championship, ended up losing to Johnson City, but got a little taste of that. And that was when I was with Pilar and all those guys.
Well, and that's what I was going to mention. You know, I looked up that roster for that Bluefield team in the Appalachian League that you were on.
That was a lethal team.
It was. And, you know, you, when you talk about those rookie league teams, I mean, if you get one or two guys from that team that make the big leagues, then you're doing something. I'm just talking about just get a cup of coffee, not even like become like a big league player. But on that 2011 team that you were on in Bluefield that you said made it to the championship series, it was you. Noah Syndergaard was on that team. Aaron Sanchez was on that team. David Rollins, who was in the Astros system, wound up getting traded with you over to the Astros. He was on that team. He's gotten some big league time. You mentioned Kevin Pillar. Yep. I mean, just with those pitchers alone, I mean, that was quite a rookie ball team.
Yeah,
did you have any idea how much talent there was at that time?
We had some dudes, and the thing is we did. I mean, we all knew that we had a really good team, and everyone was really confident. And the chemistry on that team was like nothing I've ever played with, you know. Just a really good group of guys, and that was real special to me because that was my first year, and that was kind of my first taste of real baseball, you know, that rookie ball league, the GCL. You know, you're playing at noon, the hottest part of the day, with maybe – you know, with more of us in the stands than there were, you know,
right,
more guys charting in the stands than there were fans ever
right,
watched.
Right.
But you know, that was my first taste of real baseball, and it was incredible. You know, I'll never forget that.
Now, you growing up in San Diego, baseball wasn't the only thing you did. A lot of people don't know this. I know you and I've talked about it a little bit. You went to a performing arts school.
Yeah.
For elementary school through sixth grade. So, was there a point where you thought that the performing arts, acting, dancing, singing, what have you, that might be what you do with your life?
No, never. I mean,
really?
My mom and dad, they kind of put me into it. We did a lot of theater. The school, like I said, it was a performing arts school, so half of our day was regular curriculum. The other half was the theater part, so we'd rehearse. We'd do three shows a year. And I actually enjoyed it. You know, it was fun. I think it helped me come out of my shell a little bit and get a little more comfortable. But no, I mean, baseball was always my love. I mean, every day I was wearing wristbands to school. I was wearing pullovers like baseball. I mean, I was just I didn't know what I was doing, but, baseball was always my love. And, you know, I was pretty good at acting, you know, I wasn't too bad at it, but it was never something I thought I would progress, you know, or take farther than elementary school.
So you acted, did you do any singing, any dancing?
I mean, I did what I had to. Singing, I didn't really have a great voice. I did a tap dance. A tap dance session for like 2 months. We did a performance at a fairground by my house.
Really?
And I'm proud of this. And if Marisa and Tara, if you guys are listening, I know you guys know what I'm talking about, my two sisters. We went to this thing and we rehearsed it for 2 months, and we went to this big fairground and did an event where we did our dance up there, and I was the only one out of us that didn't mess up. I nailed my dance.
So you and your two sisters.
Yeah, they're spinning the wrong directions, falling down, and I just kept my eyes forward, big smile, kept dancing.
How old were you at that time?
Oh gosh, I was young. I mean, less than 10 years old.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact age. But
and your sisters are older.
Yeah, a couple years. Yeah, one's 25, one's 29.
That's pretty incredible. You think you could break out the tap shoes and maybe show the guys in the clubhouse something one of these days?
Yeah, I think I still know a thing or two.
that's really neat. And your sisters are involved in the performing arts now, right?
Yeah, my oldest sister Marisa is a director now. She does choreography, dance. I mean, she's incredible.
With kids? Or?
Yeah, with kids, okay. All the way up to high school into professional theater. She works down at the Coronado Playhouse in San Diego.
Uh-huh.
That's a pretty big. Pretty big theater down there.
Yeah.
And then she does stuff as small as a young actors theater. She works with the Christian community theater. She does our local high school. So she bounces all over. She's an angel. And she's really good at what she does. My other sister was an athlete that went out and played D2 basketball out at in Chicago.
Okay.
Ended up having a few injuries that shut her down, but now she's back home.
Wow, that's pretty neat. But yeah, performing arts school. So it was like the elementary school version of Fame, I'd imagine. I don't even know if you're old enough to remember Fame.
That was what it was. Yeah, Fame was our program name.
Was it really?
Yeah, the Fine Arts Magnets in Education.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice to know they watched that show out in San Diego. Well, we're certainly glad you chose baseball, by the way. I mean, it seems like it's worked out okay for you.
Yeah, it's been too bad.
Did you play any other sports?
I played football and basketball. In high school, I played a year of basketball, but it was a little too demanding of the schedule. I always, chose baseball over basketball, and our coach wasn't happy with that. So I split off from that after our freshman year, but I did football my sophomore junior year, and I was pretty good. I got a couple letters from schools for football.
What position did you play?
I was a lineman, actually. I was offensive tackle, left tackle, and a defensive end.
And you said you were 6'2 as a freshman?
Yeah.
Because you're 6'5 now.
Yeah,
right?
I was 6'2, 210, and graduated at 6'5, 230, 225.
Yeah, I could see you as a pulling guard in high school.
We didn't have a very big team. We didn't have big boys, so I was one of our linemen. I would have liked to be like a tight end, or I had pretty good hands. I could catch the ball well, and I could sling it a little bit. So I wasn't as quick on my feet as I am now, though, so that was a little too slow to play quarterback.
Well, Joe, really good to have you here. Really glad you're with the Astros. Look forward to seeing your progression. I know you're going to be in the big leagues this year, whether it's to start the year or later in the year, whatever it happens to be. But, you're obviously a big part of what the Astros are trying to do. And so glad you're here and are continuing to progress.
Yeah, man, I'm looking really forward to this year. And wherever it is that I'm called upon, I'll be ready for the opportunity when it comes. And I'm really excited to see what happens this year with this team.
All right, Astros pitcher Joe Musgrove joining us for Astroline. I'd like to thank all who made the broadcast possible tonight. Studio producers Bob Elliott, producer engineers Matt Bolt. I'd like to thank all the great people here at Duffy Sports Grill of Clematis. Make sure you come down here when you're in West Palm Beach. Great, great restaurant, great bar. Make sure you come and check it out. I'm Robert Fort saying so long. This has been Astroline presented by Carbach Brewing Company.